From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 18th, 2022. Your Milwaukee Bucks are home for three games this week, starting Saturday night with the Brooklyn Nets. And today is National Drink Wine Day, all day. We're getting a late start, so we may need to start this before the podcast is over. Let's start with this bizarre quote from the mayor of New York City. He said, "It's hard to tell the difference between a person hooked on cheese and a person hooked on heroin." He's obviously never been to Wisconsin. He makes it sound like being hooked on cheese is a bad thing. A geographically challenged man wanted to help the protesters in Ottawa, Canada. So this guy called in a bomb threat to Ottawa police. Just one problem. He called Ottawa, Ohio. He's being charged with making a bomb threat and just being stupid. Last week, we had an animal story about mating season for armadillos. Well, now a British zoo hopes to get their monkeys in the mood with some Marvin Gaye. They went so far as to hire an impersonator to sing Marvin's classics like Sexual Healing and Let's Get It On. And that, boys and girls, is today's lesson in animal husbandry. The makers of a new perfume are using the scent of something that's totally irresistible to guys. We're talking French fries. Fritz by Idaho is a limited edition fragrance available only on the Idaho Potato Commission website. What guy wouldn't be turned on by this? And if you throw in some ketchup, you wouldn't need Marvin Gaye either. A Maryland man was sent to the store by his wife to buy chicken dinner. He decided, all on his own, to buy a scratch-off lottery ticket that ended up being worth $100,000. This was literally winner, winner, chicken dinner. On today's podcast, we have Kyle Tedding, Brian Kilb, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty ugly week. NASDAQ lost 1.8%, shedding 243 points to close at 13,548. The broader markets, the S&P 500, lost 1.6%, shedding 70 points to close today at 4349. Dow Jones Industrial Average gave up a whopping 659 points, losing 1.9%. Closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week just a hair above 34,000. 34,079. Year to date, kind of a garden variety sell-off here. NASDAQ down 13.3%, broader markets down 8.6%, and the Dow down 6.1%. You know, we had nice recovery on Tuesday when it appeared that President Putin was potentially withdrawing troops from the border of Ukraine. Turned out they couldn't verify that, and the market sold off basically for the rest of the week. Uncertainty about Ukraine is certainly driving the markets the last couple of weeks. But in my opinion, what is equally important is the prospect of much higher interest rates. The Fed released their minutes this week. Sounds like they're setting us up for a half point increase in the overnight rate in the middle of March. You know, Kyle, let's bring you into the show. The market's been bumpy lately.
Yeah, I think that that maybe is an understatement given what we've been dealing with in terms of geopolitical risk, in terms of, you know, financial risk within our own country here, and, you know, what the Fed might do. I think there's a number of questions that continue to float out there. Certainly, as we head into a long weekend for the markets, I think, you know, today's selling pressure was a pretty good sign that, you know, investors don't want to be carrying a lot of risk any longer than they have to. And with markets closed on Monday, you know, trying to maybe de-risk portfolios a little bit. But I think as we look at, you know, what the risks that are out there really are, the one risk we're not seeing is a significant risk of earnings slowdown right now. You know, you look at earnings forecasts, you look at kind of growth forecast for the economy, certainly things will take a step back from where they have been, but we're still not forecasting recession. We're still not forecasting profit recession. And so I think that's the area where there is some at least light at the end of the tunnel potentially. And investors, I think, need to keep in mind that ultimately stock prices tend to mirror the direction of earnings. And so if we do think that earnings are going to be going higher, you know, I think the temporary pain that we're feeling from some of the uncertainty right now, hopefully longer term, offset by, you know, the benefits of what will likely be higher earnings for U.S. companies as we look, you know, beyond maybe the next 6 months or year and down the road.
Brian, you look at the broader economy, what's not to like? GDP is supposed to be up 4.5% this year. To Kyle's point, you know, profits are supposed to be up almost 9%. So that normally gives you a pretty good year for increases in stock prices. So it seems to me that we got to get past the inflation scare, short term, the problems in Ukraine. But I think the strength of the underlying economy looks pretty good for stock prices later in the year.
You know, Bob, I think so often, you know, the way you and I grew up in the inflationary environment we grew up in and the way things have proceeded is a little bit different now. You know, I think oftentimes in recessions and whatnot, you'd be worried if you had a job or if you had a decent job and you were able to afford something. I think the good news now with pretty much full employment, however we might define that, is people that want a job are getting a job. People have money, they have money to spend. And to your point, Kyle's point, I think it keeps a bottom kind of on corporate earnings. And we can talk about how far ahead we'll proceed, but I do think the downside seems pretty well protected by the health of the economy as it sits right now. And I would almost kind of look at this week as somewhat encouraging in that I think as many things as happened this week, things didn't get worse, actually. Watching the 10-year treasury there for a while this week, back all the way up to 2.06 and now back to, I'm not sure even where we ended the day, 1.9 something, but to see that settle a little bit, maybe ease some pressure on interest rates, you know, in this whole bag of kind of a crazy week, I think we held up pretty well, and that does bode well moving forward, I think.
You know, Brian, you think about the 10-year treasury, of course, we started the year with the yield roughly 1.5%, as you just said, we're roughly at 2. That's a pretty good run-up in rates in a fairly short period of time. So that's the whole nature of the sell-off, that you look at higher rates. We've talked about this on the show a number of times. Pretty straightforward, that you have to discount future cash flow by a higher number, which results in a lower present value. I mean, it's kind of that straightforward, which is why a bit ago I called it a garden variety sell-off. Kendall, let's talk about inflation here for a minute. You know, it seems that there are all sorts of news organizations out there banging the drum of how it gets worse. I mentioned Monday, the research meeting, that month over month inflation peaked in October. And of course, it's a little bit early to call it, but as you know, they think about 40% of the increase in inflation came from government stimulus programs. That's mostly behind us. 60% of inflation bottlenecks in supply chain. It's not even across the board, but a lot of industries think that by the end of the year, that'll be a thing of the past. And, you know, they're still forecasting 2.5 to 3% inflation by year end. They're not close to accurate with that. Rates aren't about to take off on us. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, to your point, that looking back, I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that, you know, inflation had peaked in October. You look at any of the big news outlets and they're, you know, everyone's got that big flashy headline of 7.5%. So I think we're trending in the right direction. I think there's a lot to be optimistic about. You know, one of the big things is COVID cases finally trending in a right direction. You know, roughly at about 120,000 7-day average here the past couple of days. And you look back at mid-January when, you know, it was 4 or 5 times that. So I think there's optimism that, you know, people are going to head back into the workforce. And I think that may open up some more spending in the service side of things and maybe help ease some of the pressure, you know, on the good side. And I think, you know, another conversation is just reminding clients that we've been a little spoiled here with market volatility over the last few years. I think when we have these years that are just fantastic back to back to back, we get comfortable and we forget that, you know, market volatility is a part of investing and it's part of the process here. And one thing I love to remind clients is that if you're in a balanced portfolio, whether it's 50-50 or 60-40 stock bonds, that you're not 100% invested in the stock market. So you see these big headlines, the Dow being down 10, the NASDAQ down 12, you know, give or take, most people are down half that, maybe a little more. And sometimes clients, believe it or not, no matter how long they've been here, are still always surprised to hear that.
Well, and maybe stress, of course, that, you know, I think you're right to point out that an increase in the workforce helps service sector spending, but also stress that a good portion of spending was taking place because consumers felt wealthier. Their houses were worth more. Their portfolios were worth more. Certainly housing prices have continued to go up, but I think as people open January statements, potentially open February statements in a couple of weeks, they may not feel as wealthy as they look at their portfolio. You know, Bob, as you mentioned at the start of the show, the S&P is down 8.6 right now. Certainly a balanced portfolio is not down that much, but it's also not a positive number right now. And so I think, you know, you have a lot of people looking at their portfolio and potential spending from their portfolio and going, okay, maybe we want to just slow down a little bit our spending right now, let things recover. And sometimes even just the delay of that can have an effect on what we expect for inflation. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of pieces going into kind of these inflationary pressures right now. I think important for investors to remember there's a big difference between what we were talking about, you know, maybe mid 80s when we were going on a decade then of, you know, double digit inflation and where we're talking about inflation right now, where we've had a decade where inflation was below target. And so really, if anything, we may be catching back up to where we were supposed to be. And there'll be kind of this natural slowing as some of those problems are resolved.
You know, I think people need to be careful when you do year over year comparisons. They tell us that inflation is up 7% 12 months through January. I'm surprised it wasn't higher. You think about a year ago, January, very few of us had been vaccinated. Most people were hunkering down. Nobody's out spending money in restaurants or theaters or concerts. You know, we were all playing the hermit role. And then you tell me 12 months later that, you know, 2/3 of the country has been vaccinated. People are going out and about. That prices were up 7%. I'm surprised it wasn't higher. But as I said earlier, I think it's more important to drill into the month over month changes because that gives you a better sense of direction. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the show. As you know, the Commerce Department reported Wednesday morning that retail sales rose 3.8% in January. That's a big number on the heels of the holiday shopping season.
That's also a big number when you're talking about people being concerned about inflation. Now, some of the inflation is included in that because it doesn't correct for higher prices. But the fact that people were out spending, you know, almost 4% more in January than they spent in December, yeah, it says a lot about pent-up demand to spend and willingness to do that amid all of the headlines about inflation. The Commerce Department has 13 different categories, and 8 of them rose that month. One of them that didn't rise was, you know, one that we've been watching since this time 2 years ago, and that's bars and restaurants. Well, you know, we had the Omicron variant still playing into that in January, and you know, I'd be surprised if that number's down again in February, but. It's an example of one of the things that's been going on out there that's kind of a short-term, maybe a one-off event that's affecting some of the other numbers. Otherwise, you know, I think what you said before about the underlying economy being strong, a lot of the numbers that we're seeing are suggesting that. We had the report today from the Conference Board on the leading economic indicators. And that declined slightly, that index declined slightly in January. But the Conference Board itself said, you know, look, it just affected these few things. It's probably more because of the Omicron variant, rising prices, you know, continued kinks in the supply chain, things that we think might be, you know, going away in the not too distant future, maybe, maybe not. But the conference board said, we've got widespread strengths in the economy. And they're saying that for the first quarter of the year, compared to the first quarter of last year, they're seeing like a 3.5% increase, which is a pretty good rate when you've got all these other things going on.
Kyle, let's talk about the bond market for a minute. It's been a challenge for many investors with bonds underwater last year and to start this year. Of course, we had a wonderful 2020 in the bond market. Many investors made 2-3 years return in just one year. But you and I were talking earlier in the week about the yield curve and the fact that investors kind of want to go to cash when rates are going up. But the reality is most people are better off in the intermediate range and that you actually have to be a little bit careful at the short end of the yield curve because that's what's ready to climb. You want to comment on that, please?
Yeah, well, let's remember that the yield on the 10-year treasury is about 1% higher over the last year. And so if your thinking was let's run to cash because we think rates are going to go up, well, you've already missed a good chunk of that move. And I think it highlights, just like in the stock market, how difficult it is to time the movement of interest rates and ultimately then the movement of bond prices. And so what we're left with is a 10-year and maybe a 5 or 7 year bond treasury that's already moved significantly higher. The next move to come probably isn't in those intermediate or longer dated bonds. It's, you know, as you mentioned at the top of the show, the short end of the yield curve, those very short term overnight rates that are controlled entirely by the Fed. And so now the mistake you're making, if you go from that intermediate side to a much, much shorter duration, a much shorter bond, is you've taken all the pain from the intermediate side or a good chunk of the pain. Now you're moving shorter and you're getting hit by the Fed. And so you're taking a beating a second time for no reason. When if you had just stuck around in that intermediate bond space, you've already digested some of the pain. Maybe there's more, but for that pain, you're getting significantly higher interest rates. Remember that in a bond fund, you aren't just stuck with a bond that's going to mature in 5 or 6 years in an intermediate bond fund. You've got bonds maturing probably every day in a lot of these bigger funds. And as those portfolio managers are out there shopping, all of a sudden they're finding bonds that have a higher interest rate than they did before. And so, you know, if you stick around in that thing that's already been hit, you've got the benefit of those higher rates that are all of a sudden being paid. You can wait out some of the pain on the shorter side of the yield curve that's still to come as we see, you know, 4, 5, 6 rate increases this year, potentially they're talking about now. I think, you know, all of that points to, you know, the challenges of timing bond markets being in many ways just as difficult as the challenges of timing stock markets. And the reality is that as the yield curve starts to flatten out, as the short end starts to move higher, it's going to hurt those short bonds. You're going to miss out on some of the better rates if you go straight to cash. Yeah, maybe there's a place for cash. There's a place for shorter term bonds for a portion of your money. But I continue to think that, you know, if what we have seen so far in the yield curve, a steepening in kind of that 5 to 10 year range is representative of what we're going to see from the Fed, at least over the next few Fed meetings, you know, the benefits will be in waiting out those moves. The benefits will be in capturing some of the higher rates that exist now on that intermediate side of the curve.
Ryan, I want to circle back to something you said a bit ago about inflation, because I think it's an important point. You know, interest rates are going up because inflation is going up, and it's important to do a deeper dive on really what's causing inflation to go up, and it's very, very different than what we experienced in the second half of the 70s and the early 80s. Back then, it was a wage price spiral that is very difficult to stop. This time around, it's just simply because of bottlenecks in the supply chain coming out of COVID. Very different type of inflation. What we're experiencing now, it's not a matter of if inflation is going to come down, just a matter of when. Back in the second half of the 70s and early 80s with Paul Volcker and Ronald Reagan helping to save the country by dramatically raising rates, it was necessary because of wage price spirals once they start. Once that genie gets out of the bottle, it's really hard to put it back in. So I appreciate your bringing that up, that the inflation we're experiencing now is in fact very different.
Well, and I think too, Bob, that I've had some clients question, people always do, but the Fed, and you know, are they late, and are they, you know, hey, I think they've switched gears pretty quickly here. You know, they can't predict things a year ago. None of us can. I think they kind of laid out what they thought was going to happen. It didn't happen that way. And now they're changing and reacting accordingly. So, you know, we're talking more rate increases and maybe even a 50 basis rate increase in March. I think that's doing your job. You know, that's recognizing that circumstances have changed and they're reacting. And I think maybe the other part of it is, if you think longer term and you consider the fiscal and monetary stimulus that's occurred over the last decade or more, and you kind of realize that we've hit an inflection point and interest rates have started to go the other way, you'd think that maybe the damage in markets would be more severe. But I think what it says is there's enough other good news, that being corporate earnings and the fact that interest rates probably won't go too far, to sustain things, you know? And I think that's what you want at the end of the day. You want interest rates to rise to appropriate normal long-term levels, but you want it to happen without severe damage in markets. And I think so far, you can say that's happened. Yeah, we've had a rough January and parts of February, but really, not significant in the scheme of things you and I have seen over decades in the business, you know.
Your point is very well taken. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.